Hi, welcome to another episode of the Inside Windows Phone Show. And today we're here with Bill. Why don't you introduce yourself, Bill?
Hi, I'm Bill Leach. I'm with Preemptive Solutions, and we do DocuSkater and runtime intelligence.
Yep, and this is the day after PDC, so we're going casual.
That's right.
We have no studios.
We're all tired and worn out from PDC, but we're ready to talk.
Yep. Bill, we're taping this because we know there's an announcement coming, and we don't know yet when, but we know it's coming. So tell us what you think, tell the developers what's coming for them.
Well, we've come to an agreement with Microsoft in the Windows Phone 7 space where the full version of DocuSkater will be available for all Windows Phone 7 developers, both in terms of analytics and obfuscation. So basically a full version of DocuSkater that does everything our commercial version does, and it's for free for Windows Phone 7 developers doing both Silverlight and XNA.
Wow. So there'll be people who've never heard of obfuscation or are not familiar with your analytics. So can you walk us through obfuscation, what it is, or demo it, whatever is easier for you?
Sure, absolutely. I have a very simple Windows Phone 7 app that we've demoed at PDC, in fact, and I've got it set up to do both obfuscation and analytics. And so to step back to your earlier question, obfuscation is really a way to prevent or hinder reverse engineering of .NET applications. So we've been doing this for a number of years, basically since .NET shipped and even before. And we have a number of ways in which we can transform your .NET application into an application that's harder to reverse engineer using tools like Reflector and ILDASM.
Yep. So, you know, bottom line is Silverlight and .NET framework compiled to this intermediate language. It's pretty easy to read back.
That's right.
Tools like Reflector make it really easy for you to read that code back.
That's right.
Those tools are designed to help developers, but somebody who wants to be mean.
Sometimes they can be used for evil.
Yep.
.NET, you know, by its very nature, is easy to decompile back to the original source code or something very similar to the original source code.
Yep.
Maybe not a one-to-one, but it's a lot easier to look at the source code embedded in .NET binaries. So a lot of seasoned .NET developers already know this. It's been around for years. But yeah, there might be a new generation of developers who are doing phone application development and Silverlight development who may not know this. But.
Yep. And so .NET by itself is easy. DocuSkater makes it hard. So that somebody who wants to protect their intellectual property or, you know, they have something in the assembly like a secret, a key or anything they want to protect is, you know, DocuSkater will make it much harder for somebody to reverse engineer.
Right. Makes it harder. Never impossible. We all have heard stories of the dedicated hackers who will stop at nothing to extract things from applications, even those that are wrapped in heavy-duty DRM and stuff like that. But obfuscation definitely makes it harder.
Yep. So great.
So make them have to work for it.
Yep. And you have a commercial version.
Right.
I bought it, and I have to say it's worth the money, but it's not that cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So the announcement here with people getting it for free is a really great deal for all Windows Phone developers to get it for free.
Yeah, it is a big deal. I'm hoping it will generate a lot of excitement.
Okay. So can we go through the demo and see it in action so you can show people how it works?
So, yeah, what we've got open here is DocuSkater's standalone UI.
Okay.
And I've configured it to a real simple demo application. It's a Windows Phone 7 app. If you've seen the talk at PDC, it's an itinerary application. It's got some dates, some lists, and stuff. So it has two pages. It's not a complicated app, but it's sufficient to demonstrate what we're doing. So this is the input assembly screen.
So at this point, I'm a developer, and I've just, I cracked Visual Studio, I coded two nights in a row.
Right,
and I'm ready to rock. I have a SAP and it works because it's got two screens and it's connected to data.
Yep.
that's all I've done so far, right? I mean, that's the input you're putting into it.
Right, yeah, that's a good point. We are working on your Zap file. So when you're done developing it and it's all packaged up and ready to go on the phone, you take that Zap file and you put it as an input into Dofuscator right here. So you click on the open folder and you browse for your input assembly and you add it. That's what I've done.
Yep.
Dofuscator can read Zap files in a native format, so once you've got your Zap file in, we explode it here and show you what's in it, and we allow you to configure various settings on it in terms of obfuscation. So we have this concept of an input assembly, which is your DLL here, and also package artifacts. Now, a package artifact is something that Dofuscator is not going to touch once you hit the build button. We're not going to transform it in any way. We're only going to transform the input assemblies.
Yep. So artifacts are excluded.
Right.
And
They're passed through into the output Zap file, but they're not. We don't touch them. So.
Okay.
So for each input assembly, and here there's only one, but we support multiple. You can set various options. And most of them here are all default settings. So library mode is. Basically tells Dofuscator that your application is meant to be consumed by other possibly non-obfuscated code. So we're not going to do name mangling, for instance, on publicly visible identifiers.
Yep.
So that's the main setting for library mode. We recommend that as a best practice for phone applications because they do interact with the runtime. They do interact with other resources such as XAML.
I use library mode for everything, man.
Because
it does what I need. Like, I can go in there and protect my stuff with, you know, just make something protected or, you know.
Right.
And it makes it easier for me. Like, otherwise, I have to go through a whole lot of code. And every now and then, there's a binding or a public property out there that I'm obfuscating, not knowing.
Right. Yeah. When I talk about transform XAML, I'll talk about some of the issues that come up when you're doing renaming in the context of a XAML-heavy application.
Bindings and all that. So.
Yeah, but library mode gets you a reasonably good level of renaming. So.
Yep.
And we'll show you that in a second.
Okay.
These other settings are meant to control how we deal with attributes. So, little known fact, you can control Dofuscator settings using custom attributes, and we have the option to strip them out after they've been processed. So that's what those control. And the last setting here, pardon me?
So this is new to me. So I,
okay.
So like when I obfuscate when I go in and write my code, you're saying I can write an attribute that says, for example,
you don't have to write an attribute. We ship a set of attributes that you can use to control both obfuscation and analytics. You just reference those DLLs and put your attributes in, and we can strip them out after processing. So you don't have to ship those DLLs, but if you want to annotate your source code as opposed to a Dofuscator configuration file, you can do that.
Which is good because, you know, sometimes I have developers play with the configuration file and you know, not know which class. Like sometimes I want just one method in a class to be whatever, you know.
Right. So sometimes the developers have that knowledge, but the build guy doesn't.
Exactly.
Best to push it down to where the people who have the knowledge can do the configuration.
Yep.
So
let's walk through some of the options.
Okay. Let's go over here to settings. And this is sort of the main control panel for Dofuscator where you can control which transforms we do. Mm-hmm. And I'll walk you through the obfuscation settings first and tell you what each one is. So the main one is naming, which we kind of discussed. So I've set Dofuscator to enable renaming, so I've set the disable renaming to no. So it's a double negative, but it's basically full renaming with the library mode. So every non-visible identifier in your assembly will be renamed. The other thing is control flow obfuscation. So I've also enabled that. What that does is it works inside of your methods to move around the instructions while still preserving the original intent and the original behavior of the application, it moves instructions around by inserting artificial control flow meant to confuse the decompilers that are trying to recreate the original source code based on common patterns. That's how they work. They look for common patterns in the control flow.
And that's the one that breaks reflector models, isn't it?
Right. When you go in reflector and you try to disassemble or decompile a method, it will sometimes throw up its hands and say, oh, I don't know how to do this. But
yep. Okay.
The last obfuscation transform is string encryption. It's really a string scrambling because obviously once you've encrypted the string, you still have to decrypt it at runtime. So we're scrambling the string and inserting or injecting code that knows how to unscramble it at runtime as your application needs it. And the point of that is, you know, obviously not to stop hackers dead cold, but it slows them down. When they're looking for strings and secrets in your application, it's a nice layer of protection to have.
Yeah, because once you've done renaming, then code becomes hard enough to read that, if, at least my experience,
right.
It's much harder to go in there and look at strings and everything else.
Yeah, that's a good point. All of these transforms work together. So, you know, one may provide a strength here, and another may provide a strength here, and when they're put together, you've not only doubled your strength, maybe you've tripled it. Who knows? But it's these things all work together to provide a layer of protection.
Yeah, they synergize, but you can choose.
Yeah.
You can pick and choose. If you just want renaming or just want string encryption, you can go ahead and do one or the other.
One thing with Obfuscare is it's very configurable.
You can
go down to the method level. So this screen here I'm showing you is the global settings. But you can go down, once you've turned on control flow, you can go into over here, say in this tab, this is our control flow editor, and you can see we've got the whole outline of the application here, and you can check on boxes where you don't want control flow. So you can set control flow globally and then exclude down to the method level.
Yep.
And it's the same with renaming. You can do the same thing. You can go down and say, okay, well, I don't want this private to be renamed.
Yep. And this whole thing gets set into one XML file.
Right. So what this UI drives is a configuration file that's XML-based. And once you've got it set up in your UI, you can feed it to our command line or our MS Build interface.
It's safe to give to the system builder guy who's not a developer, but, you know, he just needs the XML and the command line, and, you know, he built nightly and everything works.
Right.
Which is a good thing. I've been there before.
Sometimes it's good to sort of delegate the complexity.
So cool. Well, let's run it. Let's see it in action. Because you're going to have an input assembly and an output assembly anyway, right?
Right. So I've got it set up to do, let's set it up to do just renaming. Okay. Turn off analytics for now. So we're just doing obfuscation here. This phase during the analyzing markup phase, it's actually going in and looking at your XAML resources. This is a Silverlight app, so it's using XAML. And it is going in and mapping those to identifiers that we're renaming. So, you know, you mentioned binding statements earlier and things. So we can't recognize everything because it's as most Silverlight developers know, it's highly dynamic. Sometimes you can't tell at build time, you know, what identifiers are being referenced how. You know, think of a template being applied or a binding statement based on a data context that's not known until runtime. So the renaming isn't perfect, but we can identify a lot of cases where we can actually do renaming. And when we can, we go in and update the XAML and output new XAML.
Yeah, but that's where library, at least for me, library gets me out of trouble because I used to do Obfuscator before, like WPF and Silverlight.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to have to go in and configure every little detail.
Right.
And then with XAML, the very first thing I thought was like, oh, I'm dead in the water, like, because I need everything to be, you have a name and bindings and everything. And then, you know, I found out, yeah, library does 95%
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, library will get you most of the way there.
So, and there'll be a little bit of tweaking, and, you know, but but library usually does it for you. Usually for me, it's library does the work, and then I go in there and hide a couple extra things if I feel like it. But it's much easier for me to go in and hide three than it is for me to go in and, you know, try to figure out what broke in 25 places.
Right. So, yeah.
Cool. So it's done running.
So it's done building.
We've it's usually fast.
We've outputted a new ZAP file, which is handily set up here. I don't know if you want me to run it. But here it is. I can deploy it to the phone. It's a normal ZAP file. It's output to a directory called Dofuscated by default. Again, you can control where you want it output, but by default, it's just pushed right underneath where your config file is in the Dofuscated directory.
Yeah, go ahead and run it so they see that you can run an emulator, it's fine.
Yeah,
just so they see that it still works.
Okay, so now I'm going to deploy the obfuscated application to the phone. Emulator, that is. And I'll go over to the emulator now and run it.
Cool. So same app, we can change the code.
Right.
You know, there's some renaming and all that, you know, the obfuscated is magic.
Right.
But everything works fine.
Right. Mm-hmm. So now we can look at what it did in the Flector.
Yep, that's what I want to see.
Okay. So I got it open here in the Flector. Let me drill down here into the application. So you can see the class names aren't renamed. That's because of library mode.
Yep.
But we drill down into one of these classes, and you can see the methods are renamed. And if I went into one of these methods, and you look at the decompilation on the right there, you can see that there's nothing going on.
Yep.
So Reflector is not going to decompile. It's not
going to
be easy.
Yep, so now it makes it much harder for me to, you know, for somebody that's trying to steal my logic to really see. Obviously, this is mostly UI. So
yeah.
There was a lot of public stuff, but if this was a business, you know, business logic assembly, then this will be much more reflected or much more obfuscated.
Right.
The
library mode is actually configurable by assembly, so you can take library mode off of assemblies that, you know, aren't as heavily bound to through XAML or Reflection.
Yep. So cool. So now it's protected. You know, that's officially obfuscated more than protected. That's the term. Now, but, you know, the next thing, and that's what I've known you guys forever.
Right.
I mean, you know, I've used your obfuscator for forever. But now you're also getting into analytics.
Right.
Which is a big deal for Windows Phone developers.
Right. Starting in Visual Studio 2010, the Dofuscator Community Edition has had the ability to inject analytics into applications post-build. We call it runtime intelligence. It's a product we've been working on for a number of years. And it's basically a platform for injecting things like feature tracking, tracking how often your application is run and who's using it, sort of like web analytics, but for applications that are written in .NET.
Yep. So, you know, I'm a Windows Phone developer.
Mm-hmm.
What do? I just, you know, I got the product, download it because it's free.
Right.
And, you know, I have to register my app or something. Is that... How does it work for
you? Yeah, when you get the new Windows Phone version of Dofuscator, you will also get, along with that, a set of credentials and an ID for our runtime intelligence. And you'll use that ID as part of the instrumentation process, which I'll show you in a second. And you embed that in the application, and that gets sent up with the analytics data. And we use that to... expose your application, you know, roll up the data associated with your application on our portal. So you go out there using the credentials you've been given, and you can see reports on how your application's used.
Cool. Okay, and to be very crisp, you know, obfuscation and analytics, they both come in the same tool.
That's right.
But one of them is not a requirement to the other.
No, they're right. All independent. So you can do obfuscation with analytics, or no obfuscation and just analytics, or just obfuscation.
Yep, okay. So how, like, can we turn analytics on this?
Yeah.
You can turn obfuscation off if you want, so that we can show people that it doesn't look
sure.
up to you.
Sure, we can do that. So let me turn your name off. And string encryption. And control flow. So I've turned all the obfuscation settings off.
So this will be a person who just says, hey, I want analytics for my product.
Right. And you can see I've got instrumentation enabled there. And send analytics enabled. So that's a global setting. So those both have to be enabled. Yes. And once I've done that, DocuScator is set up to do instrumentation. I'm going to go over here, and this tab is where you embed the settings. You identify what you actually want to do in terms of the code injection and the instrumentation.
Okay. So what kind of things can I do? I haven't used this one at all.
Okay. Well, first let me walk you through the baseline scenario. You want your application running on the phone to send a message when it's used. So we'll instrument it to do analytics on startup and shutdown, so you can track, say, how long someone's been inside your application on the phone.
Okay.
So to do analytics, you need a couple things at the very top level of your assembly. And again, I mentioned earlier that we do this through custom attributes. So you could put custom attributes on your source code. But I've chosen to do it in my configuration file, and the experience is similar. These are what we call extended attributes. So think of them like custom attributes, but the actual information isn't in your source code. It's preserved in our configuration file.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is your application attribute. Actually, let me talk about the business attribute first. The business attribute has this key. This is what you got when you signed up with the Windows Phone version of DocuScator.
Mm-hmm.
And that key is tied to you as an entity, as the application owner. So
the publisher.
Right. You're the publisher of the application. So you put that key in here along with your company name, and this is shows up on the reports, so it's a best practice to set it. You don't have to, but you should. And I've just created a Windows Phone 7 company. And that's it, the business section. And that information gets sent up as part of the analytics. The next thing is the application attribute. This identifies your app, and it's a GUID that you can generate. So as a publisher, you can have any number of applications, but each must have a unique application ID. So we've done that with GUIDs. And again, you can give it a name. You can fill in an application type. You can fill in a version. If you leave the version blank, we'll try to determine it from the metadata on your assembly.
Okay. So this also means, you know, I'm one company, but I'm going to ship 10 apps, and I just get a different GUID for each one of my apps.
Right.
I go to your portal, and I have reporting for my 10 apps.
Right, exactly.
Okay, perfect.
So once I've done that, that gives me my top-level identifiers for my application. Now I'm going to go down and put what we call, this is how we track the starts and stops,
mm-hmm.
through attributes called setup and teardown. So on my application launching event, I'm going to put a setup attribute.
Okay.
And this is the code, or this is the place where DocuScator will inject the code that does the basic setup tasks for our runtime that does sends the analytics, so we can We'll start up our machinery that does analytics under the hood that we inject into your application. And at that time, we'll send the application startup message. So in order to do that, you need to look at a couple things. First is the endpoint. by default, it goes to the endpoint that the endpoint, we say it's running in the cloud, that, that you'll get when you sign up, you'll get credentials to log in. It's an endpoint associated with the reports on that login.
So this is kind of like you guys' website?
Yeah. And you can leave it blank because that's the default, but you know there's other options here if you want to. And you can put your own in if you want.
So as a company, I could have this go straight to me?
Yeah, you could. In fact, we have published a CodePlex project. We call it the Endpoint Starter Kit that allows you to build very easily a basic endpoint that accepts data in our format, pushes it into a very simple database and a SharePoint web part that exposes some of the data. Sort of a starter kit to help people kind of visualize what's possible and get going if they want to build their own endpoint.
So this is cool because an enterprise, you know, they don't want their data to go to you. So
right.
They have full control over where it goes.
Yeah, they have full control.
Great.
The other thing worthy of note here is SSL. You can turn that on or off. If you want to send your data using SSL, you can. I usually set it to false while I'm testing, but it works if you don't.
And just to reverse the point I made earlier, now if I'm a small shop and I don't have my own web server, I do use your endpoint.
Yeah.
You know, the reports go to you, and then I can go fetch them.
Right. And I'll show you that in a second.
We'll and work. That's still free.
That's still free.
Okay. This is a good deal.
It is. The other thing I want to call out is the opt-in. We have the when we inject our code, you can specify a flag that we'll look at runtime that says whether the user is opted in. So if you are want to give users a choice about and we encourage that you do want to give users a choice about whether to send the analytics or not, you could conceivably write some UI in your phone app that sets a flag, and our injected code will go look at it and react accordingly.
So bottom line is, in your app, you should respect the user's privacy and tell them, hey, you're opting into analytics being sent.
Use Microsoft as a guideline. You guys have your customer
Marketplace will definitely
program.
Have a story there.
Right.
So just follow the best practices, and you have a way to plug in your UI, your string in there, just go up to date.
Right.
Great.
So that's all done in the setup attribute. Again, it goes typically in a phone application on the launching event. There's a similar event for XNA games. I've forgotten the name, but it's a method in general that needs to be called near application startup and preferably once. And also, teardown attribute, which, as you'd expect, should be called fairly late when the application's shutting down. So I put that on the application closing event handler. And what we do there is we kind of, do the things we have to do to clean up ourselves as the application is shutting down, and we send a message that says, okay, the application's not going to be running anymore. That's how we track the duration of your application run.
Good.
So once I've got those attributes, the setup, the teardown, and the business and the application attribute, you have basic analytics at that point. You want to go further, and I suspect people might, we can also track what we call features, feature usage. This application, and we've got, being an itinerary app, we decided we thought it would be fun to track what people's destinations are. So I don't know if you remember, but when you go to the page, you have a list of your destinations. You could pick one and drill down and get all the itinerary information.
Yep.
So when the user does that, we've got a method here called goToItem. It takes the destination as a string parameter, and I put an attribute on it. And it's called a feature attribute. Features come in two flavors, ticks and spans. A tick is really just says, okay, someone did this. It's a single event. A span has a start and a stop. Just like application start, application stop, there's features with a duration. So we can track how long someone's in a feature on our reports. And again, a feature span doesn't have to be on the same method. It could be, you could define a feature however you want in your application. It could be a collection of methods. So. But this one is just a tick. I just want to know that someone selected an itinerary, so I called it. The name of the feature is itinerary selected. And I want to send the name of the destination along with my feature message. That's what this extended key method arguments is. And it's I've got a wildcard in here. And what that says is I want to send a name value pair or a set of name value pairs, a dictionary, along with this message that is derived from the method arguments. And in this case, there's one method argument, and it will send that as a name value pair. And we'll use the name of the argument as the name, the value is the value. Mm-hmm.
Can this be extended? I mean, you have a tick and you have a span. Can I write my own custom thing that I want to record, or does tick and span pretty much cover everything that people that are asking for analytics?
Pretty much. I mean, I don't know what kind of thing did you have in mind? I mean, most people want to know either that a feature occurred or that a feature occurred and it took X amount of time. So.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I was looking at search strings and other things. I guess
no,
you just comment as that tick with the parameters.
Right, that's separate from the feature event type is separate. You can send all kinds of data associated with the method. It doesn't even have to be method arguments. That's what these three things here are for. You can actually point to a definition in your code where that dictionary lives, and we'll the code we inject can go find it and read it and send the data in it if you want. So if you wanted to expose a dictionary of think of an example.
Well, what I was thinking is like I want to know what a user, mingles where, where he hangs out and stuff like that. So like, if I have access to his location in an application,
right,
like a Foursquare or something, and I mm-hmm. want to know, hey, they're always hanging out here.
Yeah.
Because then I can use that and that kind of analytics to target my ads and do other
right.
things.
You can grab that data if it's available in the application and send it.
Okay. So pretty much, I mean, this is, you can pass any parameters to those two types of
right.
activities and, and then record it.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, how do you, are you logging locally and then uploading to a server, or are you just, sending the data to the server every time it ticks?
Yeah, in the phone applications, the data is sent every time the event occurs. So it's pretty fast. It's not done in a way that will inhibit, the UI performance of your application or anything. But yeah, it's done.
But it's also something
when you send a message, it goes out.
It's something that a developer should not have used.
Right. I wouldn't put it in your draw method on a game or something like that. But yeah, it should be used in.
Okay. Cool. So obviously, if you put analytics on these now, it's not going to help us. What does that report look like from? I'm sure you've run this demo before.
Yes, I have a few times.
So,
oddly enough. I don't know if you want me to build it, but we've seen it built.
Yeah, building it is just going to be the same stop, I'm guessing,
yeah.
Right? Yep.
Well, this is probably timed out, so I'm going to log off and log back in first before we do our tour of the portal. So these are credentials that I got when I signed up for the service.
Mm-hmm.
The endpoint here is runtimeintelligence.com.
Are we off the network?
Mm-hmm.
Just try it again.
So I'm going to go to runtimeintelligence.com and log in with the credentials I got when I signed up for the service. So I use this WinPhone 7 account for a number of applications. So you can see a whole bunch here. Tailspin Travel is the one we just used. So you can see that there's 19 runs. Average duration. So this is the screen you get when you get in, and it shows all your applications.
Yep.
Now I want to drill down into this particular one. And you can see some usage. Yeah, we've just started giving this demo. So there's a few usages here already. We've got, and it's all done in the emulator, so you're going to see a lot of unique users, because every time you restart the emulator, lose your uniqueness, but okay. On real devices, we use information that's cached on the device to determine the unique user. So
you're counting devices. That's relevant for developers because you know, if somebody goes in there and says, "Hey, I have, you know, my runtime intelligence says I have 5 users," you know, and then Microsoft lets, you know, one user who has 5 devices.
Right.
Install the same application for free.
Yeah, that's an important point. You know, you wouldn't expect these analytics to map one-to-one to the reports you're going to get from the marketplace.
Okay, but they'll average themselves out. I mean, not a lot of people have more than one phone.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. But that's important so that I don't want anybody to call Microsoft and then I get in trouble.
Yeah, important to know. So this is the overview. You can see trending on application usage. You can see incomplete sessions, which we define as application starts without associated stops.
Mm-hmm.
You get average time in the application, application runs, and unique users.
Okay.
You can also see features. This is a table, but as you recall, we only set up one feature in this app. So it's the itinerary selected feature. If I drill down into it, because I'm sending the actual destination string as part of the feature, we break that out so we can see, you know, that these are the airport codes of our itinerary. So you can see, you know, one person is going to LA and, you know, wherever. And you can get see the counts, you can sort by count. If you want to see what destination is the most popular, you can expose that and look at that.
And these are across users, right?
Yes, so this is aggregate across users.
There's no way to like drill through one user and see what one user is doing?
No, not on these reports. This is aggregated data.
Okay. So cool. This is, how are these live? Like, you know, will developers be able to get these whenever they want, or?
It's really a trending.
Is it real time?
It's a trending solution. It's not real time, so you don't see your data immediately. Currently, you have, I think it's like a 6-hour delay potentially. Depends on when your data hits. You know, we have a batch process that creates the report, the database that these reports are driven off of. So it's updated every so often.
Okay.
So no, it's not a real time, but the value is in the accumulated data and the trending.
Yep, and I mean, it's not like it takes a month for me to get a report.
Oh no, absolutely not. So it's real time in that sense. All depends on how you define that, I guess.
Yeah. So you know, like, can I export it, I guess? Like, do I just look at it here? Is there any kind of, you know, I'm assuming I can just copy and paste half of these onto Excel or anything like that, but...
Right, we have a data extract here.
Oh, okay, perfect.
And we also have an API, although I believe that API is not going to be available as part of the package for the free users, but, you know, our commercial clients have access to a RESTful API that can be used to download data and do whatever they want with it.
So if you just curious, if you go commercial, like, you pay monthly or Is that the answer? Like, that's how you upgrade?
It's subscription-based, yes.
So, yeah, so there's a time. You know.
Right.
Perfect. So this is good. You get people started, and, you know, they'll, right. get, they'll yeah. extract the value, and then they'll decide.
Right, and,
if they
and we
go.
Think we're offering, you know, a ton of value here as part of this.
Yep, definitely.
Part of this package, so.
So very cool. So, well, you know, we've gone long enough, I think. And it's a great overview. I'm going to play with this a little bit more because I haven't used analytics. And again, this will be, by the time people are watching this video, this will already be available to all Windows Phone developers for free.
That's right.
Right. And I do want to, you mentioned something that was interesting, is if I'm just a regular .NET developer and I'm doing, you know, Silverlight and WPF, I can actually go purchase this.
Right.
From you guys, because analytics is one of those things that, you know, everybody's hot on, and I've seen like 5 or 6 different companies build it on their own.
Right, we see a lot of that, and they don't realize how much work it is.
Yeah,
because the sometimes it's fun to build, but they forget they have to actually maintain it and take care of it take care of the data, and you know we do all that for you.
Yep. So this is a commercial solution for everybody else, and a free solution for phone. That can be granted to commercial.
That's right.
So, great. So, thanks for your time, Bill. This
sure,
is a really good
you.
Overview.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.